This is Baldy's Breakdowns, the podcast, a radio.com sports original.
Welcome to the latest edition of Baldy's Breakdowns right here on radio.com. We have reached another Wednesday. We are nearing the midpoint of the NFL season, and I am here once again with my main man, Brian Baldinger. I am Jason Lockenfor, at Jason Lockenfor on Twitter. You can figure it out. It's not that hard, I promise. Baldy is on Twitter, at Baldy NFL. You can check us out here every week on Spotify, iTunes, wherever you get your podcast. Please rate and review us as well, and give us your feedback. And Baldy, another wild week of NFL action. We're starting, I think, to see even a little more separation from the haves and the have-nots. And we've got another huge week that we'll preview as well as we go through the podcast. I just thought maybe we'd start, though, a little bit at this inflection point where for so long, it's Bill Belichick and Tom Brady against the world. And nothing lasts forever. And 20 years in this league is like 150 years.
It's a century.
It's that's like they're yeah, that's life, death, eternity, the whole nine yards. But Baldy, you look at the direction of these franchises right now, and it couldn't be more stark, the differences really across the board.
And, you know, the divorce that happened between Belichick and Brady, I mean, it's being talked about, and rightfully so. You know, which one needed the other more? And I was in Foxborough on Sunday against the 49ers, and that was the worst performance by a Bill Belichick team that I can ever recall, ever. And so that's 20 years. And that might even go back all the way to before his couple of years in Cleveland. And then you watch Tom Brady literally throw the ball 45 times to just, I call it the Arians aerial assault, the AAA offense, and to just a bounty of weapons.
Miller, woo!
Scotty Miller, I mean, do they need Antonio Brown? We'll get into it. But, you know, Tom Brady dropped back 45 times, and I was just joking this week, Giselle doesn't do laundry. She doesn't need to. His uniform didn't hit the ground. Jason, he can wear the same uniform this weekend. You know, I mean, it was a magnificent performance. And then, you know, in every War of the Roses that occurs, there's usually a winner and there's a loser. And the Patriots are at rock bottom because Cam's performance at quarterback, it was one of the worst of the week and one of the worst of his career. And if that's where they're at, Jarrett Stidham, Cam Newton, they're at rock bottom because if you don't have that guy that they always had, even when they didn't have good weapons last year and some other years where there just didn't look like there was a lot there, you at least had Brady trying to make sense of it all and give you a chance. Like, they don't have a chance. That's one of the worst rosters in the NFL right now.
Yeah, I mean, Bill Belichick, the GM, for years has been neglecting that offense, right? We've seen a proliferation of twitched up, jacked up track stars who were built like linebackers at that position. And he wades into those waters once, and it's in Keel Harry, who's he's not as twitchy as Edelman, and he's 10 years younger than him. And Edelman's not Edelman anymore. And Baldy, I think they have 100 yards receiving out of their tight ends for the season.
Yeah.
No, they
activated a rookie. In fact, I was talking to Jim Nance. He was doing the game with Tony Romo. And I was looking at Jim Nance's chart, you know, he looked at his tight ends there, you know, and he's like, well, there's nothing there. And then you looked at the receivers, N'Keal Harry, Julian Edelman, Jacoby Myers. There's not much there, you know, and you go, okay, where's their $150 million of cap money being spent? You know, I mean, it's just the roster is just incomplete. And then the one thing that you always thought you could count on was just a secondary that could lock you down. And now they're making mistakes and errors on the back end and just giving up touchdowns. And to watch, you know, like there's nothing against the running backs and the names of the running backs in San Francisco, but they had 17 runs of 5 yards or more. I mean, they completely cut them up all day long. And so, it is, and you know, to see how Brady is just flourishing right now in this system, and he's smiling and he's sending out, you know, TikTok messages on the field. And like, it's just like, it's like he's like a kid again. Like, this is what he wanted, though. He wanted just like fresh air, you know, and that's what he's getting, literally.
Before we get, I want to explore more of the Bucs with you, but before we put a bow on the Patriots, a year ago at this time, Baldy, they traded two for Mohamed Sanu, who unfortunately for them is like the rest of their receivers. Can't really separate. It's not really going to high point the ball. He's a glorified tight end. Move the chains a little bit on third and short. They have oodles of cap room next year. Baldy, they don't have anybody on their payroll next year making more than $8 million. And they've been averse to really drafting move tight ends and receivers recently. Adam Thielen, Will Fuller, Brandon Cooks, Breshad Perriman, Chris Herndon. Like, these are just some, Darren Fells. These are just some of the names that are percolating on the trade market as we near next Tuesday and the deadline. I'm of the opinion if they don't do something, it's almost like waving the white flag, because what they have from within, while they keep shuffling an offensive line on the fly, is not going to be good enough. If you were advising them, would you say, if you want to win that division and it's still kind of there, you need to add speed to your offense? You need to do something by Tuesday?
Yeah, I think you do. There's nothing there. I mean, they don't have enough there in order to really even compete in a very average and below average AFC East. And you can win that division. I mean, Buffalo has come way back to earth the way that they're playing right now. We'll see how Miami plays against the Rams and what Tua does. Nobody knows. I mean, you would hope that he could look anything like Justin Herbert. If he looks anything like Justin Herbert and what he's doing with the Chargers, because you talk about the City of Angels, and I want to get off the topic of Lakers and Dodgers, but that kid, I mean, when you get, and this ties into the Patriots though, Jason, when you have that guy, I mean, you can breathe, like you've got life. That guy, that offense was dreadful. No offense to Tyrod Taylor. It was looking dreadful. That guy, that is a fun team to watch right now. And it's excitement. And look, Jalen Guyton and Virgil Green, guys that are just got, are, you know, catching, you know, Parham, and these guys that nobody even knows are catching touchdowns from this guy right now. He makes everybody eligible for a touchdown when he's not scoring one himself. So, like, and so I'm just going, if Tua can be anything like Justin Herbert, nobody knows until he plays. I mean, they're going to probably win the division if he is.
Yeah, I'll be very interested to see if Belichick, who, let's face it, he's defensive at his core. He's a Parcells disciple. He pretty much always has told Brady and Josh McDaniels, their coordinator, do more with less. I wonder if he finally realizes how far that
pendulum is. Yeah, I mean, if you go back, you remember when they released Wes Welker, and people were like, are you kidding? Like, he just had 5 straight years of 100 catches. He's the ultimate slot receiver. Now, Edelman became that guy.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, it wasn't that he was wrong. But, I mean, that was always the offense. It went through their slot receivers for, you know, the better part of a decade, and between those two players. And to see Edelman not even involved in the offense. I mean, he had a catch last week. He's got 3 catches in the last 2 weeks. Like, I think he could still play at the level that we're used to seeing him, but they don't have anybody that can get him the ball.
Well, as we talk about, and we'll keep going back to this dichotomy, as we're talking about the Patriots and what could they do, what must they do, Tom gets his way in Tampa Bay. And at the very moment when Gronk, to me, is starting to look like a guy who's playing himself back into shape and is at least becoming a part of that offense, now AB goes into the mix. Not this week. He's still suspended this week. But for week 9, Mike Evans, you know, hasn't been moving that well. He's missed a lot of time. So, I get it from a football standpoint. From the interhuman relation standpoint, from the can he stay out of trouble standpoint, from the will he show up for COVID testing standpoint, from the will he abide by all these protocols that are unlike anything he's ever experienced before. A lot of my buddies with the Steelers say, good bleeping luck with that. Where are you on this, Baldy?
I had heard, now I don't have this confirmed, Jason, this is your wheelhouse, but I had heard that Brady sent AB to the Tony Robbins, and Tony Robbins had sessions with Antonio Brown. Now, I've seen Tony Robbins speak, and he's a motivational whiz and all that kind of stuff. Now, I don't know if that changes Antonio Brown. I don't know if the stripes are the same. I know that Antonio Brown has to know this is it. This is the final stop on whatever whatever ability to rehabilitate himself is. This is it. If he can't make it work, and Bruce Arians, you know he will have zero patience. The first time that he is either late to a meeting, has an off-the-field issue, shows up his teammates, and it does anything, Aaron's like, that's it. Like, I've been through this before with them. It seems like it's against his desire, which more, like you said, Tampa Bay. So he deflected all the questions about it the other day. There's zero rope here for Antonio Brown. So, but, when you watch him, I know Godwin got hurt and he's in out of the lineup and Evans has been battling. And I know that, but hey, you watch Scotty Miller and Gronk and O.J. Howard when he comes back. Like, do they need him? That's what I was saying to myself when I watched him play this weekend. Do they really? And just carved up the Raiders. And so, but because I think you could have too many weapons. I don't think you need six or seven. I think you need three. I mean, it's like the NBA. Like, you just give me three really good players and give me a bunch of role players and we'll go win. And I think that's what you need. But if he comes in there and just practices hard and makes Carlton Davis better every day and Jamel Dean better every day in practice, and he takes the fire that he has had, then I think it could be a positive.
Yeah, I reported Sunday on the NFL Today that I'm being told that he's going to be living with Tom Brady for at least some portion of time. Yeah. And that may end up being the whole season, because I think if it's working, Tom's going to keep him in the basement.
They're driving to work every day. If they're coming in and they're driving him to work every day and they're talking football every day and they're like, they're making TikTok videos together and like they're like twins, like they're like literally become twins. Like it'll be like another Brady phenomena story that we'll do.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Before we get off the Bucks, and I know we spent a lot of time on them, but I'm with you. I think it's one of the more fascinating stories in the league. That defense,
yeah,
really freaking good. I watched their linebackers run around. Devin White, Lavonte David. I don't know who else has a group, a duo quite like that.
Nobody does. And, they're number one in a lot of different categories. They made a nice trade when they lost Vita Vea. They made a nice trade to go get themselves Steve McClendon. He's not Vita Vea, but they're still stout in the middle. And Devin White he's the quarterback of the defense. He was 245 pounds coming out of LSU and ran 4.4. I mean, this guy, speed. And when your middle linebacker is fast, like 4.4 fast, it makes your whole defense look fast. And, to see the three sacks and see him just chase everything down. And just a warning out there to anybody that's listening and to any quarterbacks that might get wind of this. If you see number 45 coming at you from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Devin White, get down. Don't take the hit because you might not get up. I mean, he's just that vicious. And they're fun. They fly around. And as good as the offense was on Sunday, the defense just shut the Raiders down in the second half of that game.
Yeah, there was, and Derek Carr, I thought, was kind of matching Brady blow for blow in the first half, but then it was a totally different story. And another great quarterback matchup from the previous week, week seven, Baldy. We had a primetime affair that wasn't scheduled for primetime, but lived up to the billing when Kyler Murray and Russell Wilson got together. I guess Russ was kind of due for a little bit of a stinker. Nobody's perfect all the time. And the interceptions there, a couple of decisions he'd want back, to me, really were the difference of the game. But Kyler Murray, his speed, his athleticism in the second half was the difference in the game.
It is, and it will be. And those two teams, when they play each other over the next 5 years or longer, when it's Kyler and Russell, whoever gets the ball last is probably going to be the winner in some of these games. Arizona's got a ton of playmakers on the defensive side. They've been drafting these guys, Buda Baker, and now you see Hassan Reddick playing in a position where that's what he was at Temple on the outside. And, you know, whether it's Patrick Peterson or, you know, I mean, you go Byron Murphy, you look at these guys, and that play by Buda Baker, you know, picking Russell Wilson in the end zone like that. I mean, this guy is just he just changes the game. He's such a great kid. And, you know, they're playing really good defense. They have great playmakers. And the one thing about that game, it because I saw it all weekend and I've seen it all year, Jason. It used to be 2-minute drills that everybody practiced. And we called it a 2-minute drill. And everybody knew what a 2-minute drill was at the end of the half or the end of the game. It's no longer a 2-minute drill. It's a minute. That's all these guys need. Russell Wilson, Kyler Murray. I saw Matt Stafford do it against the Falcons. These guys need a minute to go down the field right now. And it could be 75, 80 yards. It doesn't matter. I've seen Russell Wilson go 94 yards for the game winner in a little over a minute this year. And so these guys are just – they've taken that drill and they've perfected it. And you see it week in, week out. But that Kyler Murray, I mean, good luck trying to chase that guy for four quarters. You know, I mean, he's not perfect, but, man, I want him running my offense. I'll take whatever foibles he has or whatever weaknesses people think he has. Give me that fire. Give me that that ability just to pull the ball down and just take off at any time. He never looks tired, even though he's running all game. It's like Michael Jordan on the football field. Like, he never looks tired, and he could just go all day.
Well, speaking of 1-minute drills, Baldy, we had another scenario like that in the Browns-Bengals game. Joe Burrow continues to just absolutely wow me. I mean, the threaded touchdown to Boyd at the end of the half, the big run on what was the go-ahead scoring drive, the touchdown pass on the go-ahead scoring drive late in the fourth quarter. But here comes Baker Mayfield, who had a poor start but then got going with 5 touchdown passes, the last of which was at the end of the game in what was basically a 1-minute drill to win that thing. A fun game to watch, and we'll have to see now if this is a springboard for Baker, because his first throw of the game was a pick. Second straight week he'd done that. He was looking like a guy who, when you keep him in the pocket and you throw some zone at him, he struggles. He bounced back, but that Bengals defense is a homecoming game for a lot of teams, Baldy. So I'm still kind of not sure what to make, you know, of Baker just yet.
Well, he missed his first 5 throws with the interception, but then he completed 22 in a row. I mean, it was every single throw. And a couple of them were like to Rashad Higgins, who he looks like he just
lost. That's his guy, yeah.
They lose Odell Beckham on the interception for the year. But then you get this Donovan Peoples-Jones that came out of Michigan, mm-hmm. who was like this athletic freak coming out of there. And nobody really, you know, Michigan didn't have a quarterback that could throw a football. So all of a sudden he just explodes and he catches a touchdown from Baker. Baker looked fantastic. I mean, he really did. Stefanski's doing a pretty good job of kind of wheeling him in and not letting him just run around and, you know, try to like make every throw in the ball. Like, it's pretty good with the runs that they do and the offensive line, the way they protected. It was a good battle, a really good battle. As every bit as entertaining as what we saw Sunday night between Arizona and Seattle. And for that division with Baltimore and Pittsburgh, you know, on a collision course this weekend in Baltimore, it's just great to see that you got quarterbacks now that really can – ignite an offense. And now it's a question of, can you get the pieces around these guys defensively, protect them, you know, better? Because Joe Burrow's been sacked 28 times. He's been hit 100. But literally nothing affects that guy. He's unbelievable. Everything you saw at LSU last year, everything is on display right now. Like his poise, his confidence, like that throw to Tyler Boyd over the middle of the field. Ooh. After Myles Garrett just ruined,
right. I thought it was going to be a strip sack, Baldy. I'm surprised he held onto the ball in that play.
Like, exactly. I mean, Myles Garrett is he's just a freight train, right? Nobody can stop him. And he takes that hit from Myles Garrett and gets up the next play, dusts himself off, and throws that stick throw to Tyler Boyd in the middle of the field with about three guys hanging all over him. It shows you a lot about what he's made of. They just need better coaches and better players, in my mind.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I hope they don't screw it up, because that kid was quite a gift to the city of Cincinnati. Well, staying in that division, weird one with the Steelers and the Titans. I mean, it's 24-7. Pittsburgh is doing anything it really wants on offense or defense. I mean, they opened the game 16 plays, 75 yards, 9 minutes, 18 seconds. Another long scoring drive after that. Connor's got it going. And then, you know, I don't know why they kind of want to throw deep, and that's not who they are. And then they get picked, and then there's another turnover, and then a breakdown, you know, on a pass that ends up going for a 73-yard touchdown to Brown. And next thing you know, it's coming down to Gostkowski and whether or not he can make a field goal to send it into overtime. To me, that's kind of been the Steelers, Baldy. Like, I watch them every week, and I look at that roster, and they're getting results. But, like, Jeff Driscoll gave him a game. You know what I mean? Like, Daniel Jones gave him a game. Like, they just haven't quite been able to put it all together.
Well, you got to finish better. I mean, the interceptions were terrible by Ben. I mean, he's better than that, and he's got to play better than that. But, you know, this Tennessee team is just resilient. And, you know, anybody that wants to say, oh, Ryan Tannehill can't do it without a running game, it's just nonsense. Like, it's just not, they're not watching. They're not really watching. That guy is poised. He is a fiery competitor, although, you know, he doesn't say much. He's a phenomenal athlete. He gives him a chance. He just flat – I mean, he's got backup tackles out there playing against the best front in football, and he's getting hit and sacked and all that, and he just keeps firing. And so A.J. Brown is almost unstoppable, you know, as a receiver right now. And so it was a good game. It was a great finish, just a great finish. Entertaining game. Pittsburgh stays undefeated. They find a way. But the defense, though, I mean, they just play they play a brand of football that not many teams know how to play, just how to be physical and how to – I mean, they had a plan to stop Derrick Henry and slow him down and taking Bud Dupree and putting him in the middle and letting him just crash the party. I mean, that – you know, it was just good game planning and trying to slow him down, which they did. And so I just thought it was good coaching. It was another team that you have to take serious in this AFC and Tennessee, and over the course of a season, they're not going to go away. They're going to be really difficult to really handle, and they're going to be playing in January. So, look, Pittsburgh, you know, gets a win, and it sets up a phenomenal matchup this weekend against Baltimore.
It does. Before we get there, I wanted to pick your brain about a couple of things that I kind of noted in that Steelers game to see if it jibes with you. We talked last week about the Devin Bush injury and Spillane and not knowing what he is. Like, he's going to be a heart and soul guy. I know they think he's smart enough to play the position. He can't possibly be the athlete that Devin Bush is. I was surprised that Arthur Smith, that you weren't trying to run it through Jonnu Smith, that you weren't trying to maybe get your air back out into space more to kind of attack him and figure out what he was. Did that surprise you at all? Like, I kind of thought, all right, let's see if he can run with a tight end. Let's see if he can cover. Let's see what he can do out in space on a wheel route against our running backs. And that's not really how they attacked him.
No, but at the same time, you know, he's not really on the field that much. Vince Williams was really the one linebacker that was on the field most of the day. And so, you know, you have to, if you're trying to attack him, you're like, okay, when's he on the field and how many plays is he playing and can you get him isolated? I mean, I didn't really see him out there that much. Then he got splattered on the goal line when he hit Derrick Henry, and they kind of lost him for a while, you know? So I didn't think there was a lot of opportunities to really do that to him.
And then they seem to be very intent on what looked like to me run blitzing and getting those ends and those linebackers with a head of speed towards the point of attack before that ball was even snapped. Is that something that other people can duplicate, or they have different? I know they have different sort of athletes and different sort of, you know, their scheme's a little different, but it did hold Henry down for most of the game.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, they just wanted to get to Derrick Henry before he got to them. You know, and so, I mean, they did. They blitzed off the edge, you know, whether it was Terrell Edmonds or, you know, they had somebody coming off the edge, or they had TJ or Bud Dupree, like, just crashing hard. And so that he had to kind of stop his feet. And once they got that, then they just gang tackled him. They didn't want him to get it going. So, I mean, a lot of people have had that. But, you know, when you do that, you are susceptible to, you know, some play action passes and some other things. When they're sending secondary players at there where you're going to be a man short, you know, in the back end. And a lot of teams really can't take advantage of that. And so that's something that other teams will look at, because everybody sort of knows that that's a good plan. They just don't know how to execute it. The Steelers just have those players that can do it.
Well, Baltimore Ravens have a lot of players on defense who can do a lot of things. One thing they didn't have was maybe a natural pass rusher. I mean, Judon does it, but Judon also plays the run. I mean, Judon's not a guy who's going to have an array of moves coming off the edge or have you. And you know what? Yannick Ngakoue probably isn't either, but Yannick Ngakoue has found a way to get to the quarterback, to pick up, you know, to pick up the garbage, whether it's a coverage sack, to be in the right place at the right time, to affect the football when he gets there. And the Ravens end up getting Yannick Ngakoue for a 3rd and a 5. They were willing to give up a 2 for him at the beginning of the year. They couldn't fit him under the cap, as I reported at the time, because of some issues with Earl Thomas and his release. So, Baldy, it's not bad. You let Minnesota pay him $6 million to get him into shape, to get him going for you, and then you pick him up for $5 million at the middle of the season when he's ready to go.
So, the Ravens have lost 2 games here, like in well over a year, right? They lose to Tennessee in the playoffs. They lose to the Chiefs. And, you know, they fell behind in both games. And they blitz more than any other team in the league right now. They're blitzing a lot of bad teams that they have played that have been on the schedule. You can't do anything about that. They're blitzing 47% of the time right now. And it's the most. And look, Wink Martindale is very creative. I mean, you look at the guys that have sacks for him, you know, Deshaun Elliott and Chuck Clark and Marlon Humphrey. I mean, they blitz secondary players like nobody else. And part of you says, is that really the scheme? Is that what they want to do? Would they rather, if they're playing Patrick Mahomes, just rush 4 and have somebody win a one-on-one and drop 7 and just be able to take Mecole Hardman or Tyreek Hill or Travis Henry or whatever, like Travis Kelce, like out of the picture a little bit better than they have? Even if you go back to the first touchdown in the playoff loss to Tennessee, it's 3rd and 12, and Ryan Tannehill against a 5-man pressure throws the ball to Janu Smith for the opening touchdown. And it's good coverage, but I kind of get the feeling that just maybe we could line up with 4, and one of our guys can win a one-on-one, like you mentioned, and we won't have to blitz 47% of the time. And I think that's part of it. And then part of it, this deal is it's all about loading up. It's the arms race getting ready for January. They're going to be there in January. You want to win as many games as you can to get home field for sure. But it's about what you might see in January, the Chiefs, the Titans. You know, you go through the list of teams right now, you know, and you just get the best possible team. Like, they picked up Marcus Peters around this time last year. You know, and it was a great addition. Their defense got better the day Marcus Peters showed up. I think they played Seattle in the first game. He had a pick 6 against Russell Wilson. So I think that's what this is about. And, you know, Yannick Ngakoue, in 4-plus years now, Jason, has 42.5 sacks and 17 forced fumbles. He had sacks in 5 straight games for Minnesota. You know, I mean, he's going to get to the quarterback. And the thing about him, I think you probably know him pretty good too, coming out of Maryland, is – he's a great kid. He's a hard worker, and he really doesn't say too much. And so I think he has a chance to play like a Raven and to be a Raven and to fit into that culture, like, immediately. And, man, if you've been in Jacksonville and all you want to do is get out, and then you've been in Minnesota where it's just, you know, it's just been awful. Like, to come to Baltimore, to come to a place that they have a chance for a championship, I mean, this guy, it's like Christmas in October for him right now.
Well, and the interesting thing, too, is he's played with Calais Campbell for a long time in Jacksonville. So the stunts, the twists, the, hey, I give you this look, you do this, I do that, that's baked into the cake.
No question. Like, there will be familiarity, and He'll have a good friend right there inside that locker room, but it won't take him long to fit in. He's coming back home for the most part. So I think it's a great fit. It was a great deal, and I think he's going to help him out. You know, and the thing is, if you watch his 42 and a half sacks, a lot of them are just effort. Like, he's a relentless player. And so, you know, that's a good quality. If somebody is flushing a quarterback and he gets to run and chase after him, like, he's going to be that guy that's going to give you the effort on the other side of the field.
Well, there's a few other big week 8 matchups that we're going to get to in a minute. But before we turn the page on week 7, Baldy, I know that you've watched a lot of Cowboys tape this week, unfortunately. I hope you have had time to clean the vomit off your shoes, because I know the effect that could have on somebody who appreciates the game as much as you do. I called them on Sunday just an abject football failure. I don't know really how else to term it. That is a hopeless situation to me.
Hopeless doesn't even describe it. I mean, look, Antonio Gibson came out of Memphis. He's a draft. He ran for 128 yards. I honestly thought it was John Riggins. I thought it was John Riggins reincarnated. I mean, on the eighth play of the game, he goes for 40 yards. You know, right down the alley. And really, there's so many fundamental flaws just on that one play. Forget it. I mean, there was breakdowns all over the field all game long. But just on that one play, I mean, just the basics of how to play football. Like, they don't know how to do it. And then they've got players, and I don't want to call out anybody's name. They got players that do not belong in the NFL playing defense for them. I mean, there's no place for how they played in that game against a poor Washington team, a poor Washington offensive team. Defensively, they're pretty good. But offensive team, like, they have no business being on the football field. And they're out there. And that goes to, you know, personnel and people picking personnel and how they got to this spot. But you can tell that there is just abject failure everywhere, like what defense they're in, because five guys are playing one defense and six guys are playing another defense. That happens all the time to this team. They leave guys just wide open. You know, Terry McLaurin is a great player, but he just runs right by the right corner for a touchdown. Like, the corner doesn't know that there isn't a safety behind him. Like, they just don't. And then offensively, you know, look, when Bostic hits Andy Dalton, and not one player, like, I mean, it was a hit that you have to be thrown out of the game for, and you have to be suspended. I mean, there's just no place for that hit in football anymore. I don't care what era you played the game in. There's just no place for that hit. And to see nobody do anything about it on the team, they just stand there almost. But it sort of defines the whole team. They're in one collective deep malaise. The coaches, the players, the pulse. It's just a malaise that covers the entire franchise right now.
Yeah. And as bad as that division is, they're going nowhere. Like, this idea that, like, well, we're still in it. No, you're really not. The Eagles are going to run away with that thing when they get even a little bit healthy.
It starts this week, yeah. You know, with Philadelphia. And, you know, look, I mean, they're playing a seventh round pick at quarterback, maybe from James Madison University, DiNucci. And, like, that's where they're at. But it doesn't matter who's at quarterback right now, because it didn't matter when Dak was there. It was the same thing. Every team that plays against them right now, I mean, they're going to set records for just, you know, rushing yards and defensive breakdowns. And so, you know, there's not a legitimate starter on the offensive line, maybe Connor Williams. I mean, it's just all backups. I mean, it's just, you can have, you know, it goes back to, okay, well, all that conversation, C.D. Lamb and, you know, Amari Cooper. And I mean, it doesn't matter.
You don't have an offensive line or a defensive line. What good is that stuff? It's dependent on the other positions.
Yep. So there you go.
Well, Baldy, we touched on Ravens Steelers. The other interdivision game that could have some serious ramifications, 49ers, Seahawks. You talked about it earlier in the show. Does it next man up at running back for the 49ers? It doesn't seem to matter, that outside zone scheme and the way they block it up. is just absolutely gutting people. 3 weeks ago, I thought Seattle at least could stop the run on defense. Now I'm not even so sure about that. They don't have any pass rushers. John Schneider, you better do something by next Tuesday. Do you have a strong feeling about this game?
Well, I'll say this. Man, Kyle Shanahan is just, I mean, he's more than just an offensive coordinator. He's just a great coach. I mean, sometimes you just have to pull your quarterback out of a funk like he was in against Miami when you bench him. And you better, when you bench your quarterback, you better figure out a way to get him back to playing good football. And they have. The offensive line have woke up. They played a great game against the Patriots. It's who I thought they were, even with the backup center in Aronis Grasu going in there and played really well against New England. Jeffrey Wilson got hurt in the game. I don't know what his status is for this week. If he can't go, they might be down to Jermichael Hasty. That just looks like one of those backs in a long line of Shanahan backs, going back to Mike Shanahan, that you can plug and play, and he's going to give you really good results. I mean, he's averaging over 5 yards a carry. I watched him for 4 years at Baylor doing Big 12 games. He can play. He flat out can play. But they don't have – I don't know what the status right now of Mostert is or –
Yeah, he won't be back this week. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Jet McKinnon, they seem reluctant to put him in the game for whatever reason. So it might be but maybe it doesn't matter the way that they can run the football, control the clock, the way that they run their wide receiver sweep motions and give the ball to Debo and to Brandon Ayuk. The way that their tight ends and fullback block in concert. I mean, it is a concert. It is a run game concert. I think Seattle's going to have a lot of problems trying to solve. And so then it just becomes, you know, how much defense do the 49ers have against Russell Wilson? So just like the NFC champion, well, the NFC divisional game, it may be come down to who has the ball last.
Yeah.
And can you stop them right now? I mean, I think this game is going to be high scoring and a lot of offense. And I expect Russell Wilson to bounce back from his performance on Sunday night.
Yes.
And so I think it's going to be a great game with a lot of offense.
One other game I wanted to cover before we wrap it up for the week, because it could end up being a tiebreaker between who gets in the playoffs or who doesn't, or at least perhaps for seeding. Browns and Raiders, both teams who are showing strides this year, for sure. But both teams that I think still have a ways to go when you talk about competing with the likes of a Baltimore or a Pittsburgh or a Kansas City or a Tennessee week in, week out. In January, the Raiders defense, I watch these games, Baldy, and I feel like they're showing me something for a period of time. And then I go back and look at the game book and it's like, but damn, they still gave up another 30 plus points. You know what I mean? And wow, when they needed that play too often, it wasn't there. What do you think of this one?
Well, I'm going to be in Cleveland announcing this game on Sunday. I mean, the Raiders, if you talk about the Raiders defense, they have three takeaways in seven games, or in six games right now. So, I mean, they don't do anything on defense. I mean, Max Crosby is the closest thing to a good pass rusher they have, but Tristan Wirfs locked him up the other day. He didn't get near Tom Brady. I kind of expect Cleveland's offensive tackles to be able to block up for Baker in this game. They don't do anything on defense to affect the game. And so then it becomes just like their win against Kansas City. Can they outscore you? Can they put up 30 or 40 in the case against Kansas City? And that's what it comes down to right now. And I don't know that the Raiders, I mean, Trent Brown didn't play last week, and he's a difference maker up front for them. But they just – I mean, I think Cleveland has this game right now. I think Baker's first start was against the Raiders, and it was a shootout game 2 years ago out there when they were playing in Oakland. And I kind of feel like the Browns defensively, I mean, you'll find out a lot with what Myles Garrett is doing right now, how he can change the game. We'll see how they block him up. But I like Cleveland in his game, and I just don't think the Raiders do anything on defense right now. I mean, They keep changing all their personnel, but three turnovers, three takeaways in six games is woeful right now.
No, that's not going to get it done. And we'll see about the back end of the Browns. defense as well. You know, I'm not loving their linebackers right now or really their safeties. I bet we see a whole lot of Darren Waller in this one early to see if they can figure out who on the other side has an answer for him. Yeah, it could be a fun game to watch. I hope you get a good one there, Baldy. I'll definitely be watching from my basement. excuse me. Well, this has been another edition of Baldy's Breakdowns right here at radio.com. We will be back next Wednesday to review week 8, spin things ahead towards week 9. As always, you can find Baldy on Twitter at BaldyNFL. You can find me on Twitter at Jason Lockenfora. And please, when you download these on Spotify, iTunes, whatever, rate, review, let us know what you guys think. We hope you're enjoying this as much as we are. And we will see you next week. Thanks for tuning in.